Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded during the Texans-Ravens Monday Night Football game, it's time to Belichick your premises. And if you know anyone out there who would enjoy our rational sports, our rational football talk, go ahead and let them know about our show. We really love that. That's our number one thing. Like, we're building a community here, and we want other people to join this community because it's so rare out there to find someone who can rationally talk about football, and it's not just, you're a cheater, Tom Brady's a cheater. And someone who can do that and not just scream that Tom Brady's a cheater, joining me, Daniel T. Richards.
I actually had that moment today at work where someone said he didn't like the Patriots because they were cheaters. And I said, oh, really? What did they do? He said, well, they filmed the other team's signals. I said, oh, well, tell me, today in the NFL, is it legal to film other team signals? And they said, no. I said, go look that up. And, to their credit, they did. And they were like, I didn't know it was still, you can still do that? And I was like, you never couldn't not do it. Like, it was never illegal. Simply, Belichick filmed from a place where they used to be allowed to, which was, I might be getting these backwards, but they used to be allowed to film on field the signals. Then the next year they were told to film from the stands, and that year he filmed on field, and that was the huge hullabaloo.
I think it's inversed.
Might be the opposite of that, I don't remember. But whatever it was the opposite, and it was a huge hullabaloo because he filmed in a place he was allowed to the year before.
Although it seems like if it was in the stands, Patriots fans must not have been that incensed yet, because if it was you're not allowed to film in the stands, I feel like we all would have used our camera phones to film every play and just inundated the Patriots on social media with all of the game footage. Like, I think that's how we would have stuck it to Goodell.
That's right. Totally. But to this guy's credit, he was like, oh, I had no idea that was what the controversy was about. I said, yeah, I know, because fucking media is terrible. Hashtag fake news. Go Trump 2020. No, I would never say that part. Never. Never.
You could argue, though, that Spygate was the original fake news.
It's true. It was up there. That and Cleopatra was a woman. Fake news. Bet you didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
Wait, what?
I'm just kidding. Move along. It's a terrible joke. Just move along.
Well, I thought you were making like a Cleopatra was a hermaphrodite joke or
That's
something.
That's what I was saying. She was a man. That's what I'm saying. If I had to explain the terrible joke, it just becomes more terrible.
This is what happens when you don't give a shit about football. You have nothing to talk about on this show.
I know. This was a week for me that was weird because I was just sort of radically busy. A lot going on at work, a lot going on at home. And I just, like, I only had enough energy to really focus on the Patriots game. And that's basically all I did this week in my football life, was focus on the Patriots game, and then I was out. And this game, this Monday night game, this isn't even a fucking game. This is a shit show clown college. The Ravens and the Texans, all this entire game so far, I don't know if anyone's watching this or did watch it last night because this is posted the next day. Time is weird.
There you go.
This whole first two drives is just penalty, 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 penalty. And not because the refs are being insane. It's because they're committing a penalty in every single play. So.
Well, to be fair, it is the Ravens. It's pretty much their MO.
Yeah. So this is all shit. And this game is terrible, and this week I have very little to talk about with football, so Justin, go!
Do you know who's devolved or descended into obscurity in this game?
Tom Savage?
No, Tom Savage is obscure. Nobody knows no. Tom Savage. No, the other quarterback, Joe Flacco. Remember when people were like, is Flacco elite?
I remember that debate.
I think we can safely say that Joe Flacco is not elite, but I'm surprised that people still know who he is. So one of my favorite movies is The Replacements. It's a sports comedy that came out when I was in high school. It stars Keanu Reeves and Gene Hackman. Keanu Reeves is a quarterback who played at Ohio State. He played in college. He never played in the pros, but there's a strike. So Gene Hackman does his best pre-Belichick impersonation and gathers a team of players that nobody would expect him to sign to make a replacement team for the Washington Sentinels. And I don't even know what word I just said there. Sentinels.
Tentacles? The Washington Tentacles?
And the quarterback is Shane Falco, played by Keanu Reeves. So I was like, you know what? It would be really cool if I had a Shane Falco jersey. So I went and I bought one on eBay. $30. This is authentic. Stitched name, the actual authentic patches from the jersey of the team. So from the movie, it's the actual patches. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a cool guy, and I'm going to wear this to Disneyland, because even though it's November, it's still warm in California. And I go up to one of, like, the booths. They're having, like, a special holiday food thing, and, you know, my girlfriend eats any type of food because she's a foodie. And I go up to one of the booths, and the kid there in the booth is from Philadelphia, so, you know, they're big football fans. He goes, hey, nice jersey. I go, oh, you know what that is? And he's like, yeah, it's really cool. And then the guy standing next to him goes, yeah, Joe Flacco's a really good quarterback. I just stared at him. And then he goes, don't talk to this guy. He's an Eagles fan. He's from Philadelphia. And I'm like, you do not know what you did wrong, man. Because here's the thing. I'll talk to a Philadelphia fan who knows what he's talking about over somebody who doesn't. Like, that's, I mean, Philadelphia fans are obnoxious, right? But at least they know their shit.
That's true. Although I'm surprised he didn't just boo you.
You can't boo me because that's like a super obscure thing. But that's, I mean, the fact that like people don't even really know who Joe Flacco plays for anymore and don't know the difference between Shane Falco and Joe Flacco, like that dude has descended into obscurity, hasn't he? A
little bit. It's sort of like what happened to him. Or conversely, why was he so good that one season? And I think this is an interesting topic to delve into rationally. Because I think, you know, you can say like, oh, is he quote unquote elite? You know, what does that mean? I guess it has some contextual meaning, but it's really like, if you were to put together a list of the quarterbacks playing today who showed the most talent, would he make the top 10? Why or why not? And I guess that's what I mean by elite. So here's the question for you, Justin, because undeniable that Joe Flacco that season had great numbers, seemed to be hitting every pass. But the question I have for you is, can a quarterback in a league as, I don't know, talent heavy as meritocratic as this, really put together an entire season based almost solely on luck?
Solely on luck? It's not luck.
Almost solely on luck.
I don't really like the word luck. I mean, yeah, there are elements of luck in there, but there are elements of like, haven't you ever just had one thing that you did really well for a short period of time and then you descended back into like mediocrity?
What? I don't know what you're talking about. I have a weird anecdote that I could get into.
So it's sort of like hitters in baseball, right? Hitters in baseball can get on hot streaks or they can get in slumps. It's sort of the same idea. Flacco had one really good season where he played out of his mind, but also the officiating was on his side. I mean, let's not forget that was a season where Flacco would just throw up bombs and they would either catch it or there would be pass interference on the defending team, on the cornerbacks, on the secondary. And that's how he got all the way to the Super Bowl and won. But sometimes you go on hot streaks, right? It's like suddenly there's like one year where you bang like 10 girls, but then like usually it's like we zero. Like it happens sometimes.
So I was trying to bait you into talking exactly about that past situation. And it's because it relates to this season. And so what Justin is talking about is there was sort of a, I don't want to call it a loophole, but there was a certain way that the NFL was officiating in that time period, not just that season, but that time period, where if you threw a long pass the officiating was going to almost always be on the side of the receiver, and basically the receiver could stop short of this long pass, get run into by the defender, and get a pass interference called on them.
Well, everybody had this idea at that point in time that if the defender was not looking for the ball, it was automatically PI. So if he ran and stood in front of you but didn't look for the ball, they thought it was PI. And apparently the refs had that impression as well. But that's not PI. You don't have to look for the ball.
Right.
They were confusing that with face guarding, where if you stand there and put your hand in the guy's face, yeah, that's PI.
Yeah. So Joe Flacco, I think, you know, because I totally get the concept of being on a hot streak. What troubles me about the Joe Flacco conversation is that it's difficult for me to conceptualize a hot streak that lasts 16 games plus the offseason. That's, in a league of so much talent, that's hard to do. So I think that Flacco in that season certainly was having, you know, the kind of season that, say, Alex Smith had at the beginning part of the season, mixed with this strange anomaly in the calling on pass interference, mixed with a bit of luck. You know, sometimes getting passes caught that otherwise might not be caught. And of course, you don't want to say that he's completely untalented. He's not, who's a completely untalented quarterback, Justin?
Colin Kaepernick.
There you go.
Oh,
thank you. I was trying to set you up for that. But
oh, were you?
Yeah. So he's not a completely untalented quarterback.
To be fair, Colin Kaepernick's not untalented either.
And part of the, you know, Flacco's talent, which I do want to point out, is that he had the ability to throw incredibly long passes. The sort of vernacular, I guess, that gets used is he had a cannon for an arm. They weren't particularly accurate, and they didn't have to be because of these strange rules, but he could throw it pretty deep down the field.
Are we really dedicating this much time to Joe Flacco?
What I want... We're the only media outlet still talking about Joe Flacco.
But not even Baltimore is talking about Joe Flacco. They're talking about why they didn't sign Colin Kaepernick.
I'm going to bring this back to rules and ultimately Bill Belichick.
Are you going to talk about the stupid offensive pass interference thing they're obsessed with calling this season?
Yes, and that is what I want to talk about, which is it is inevitable that things like pass interference are going to be called differently every year. We've seen that this year, where the obsession with the officiating has been on offensive pass interference. These push-offs or these stiff arms or whatever it is that Gronk gets called for one out of every three times or something.
It's specifically the screens on crossing routes for wide receivers and tight ends. So when you go across the middle, it's sort of like a pick and roll in the NBA. A pick is the word I'm looking for. It's like a pick and roll in the NBA where two receivers cross and you put Gronk in the way and they run into Gronk. But if Gronk extends at all, they're going to call PI on that.
Yes, exactly. And they've been obsessed with it this year. Gronk in particular, but on many other teams, they've been obsessed with this offensive PI. And the part of the reason I want to bring this up overall to give us something to talk about in this show is that Belichick gets painted with this brush of, you know, if he's not cheating, he's at least, you know, not using the spirit of the rules, right? He's maybe playing by the letter of the law, but not its spirit. And I think that that is an unfair characterization, because the rules of a game, and we've talked about this before, the rules of the game are there to sort of enhance what the game is supposed to be about, to delimit what the game is and to enhance what it is supposed to, what the competition supposedly is, the athleticism, what it's supposed to be. And so the rules, which are set in stone and given to every team in advance, shape how the game is played. And if the rule book says that you can do X, and it's not going to be called as a penalty, and your team does X, and someone goes, well, that's not really the spirit of what we're talking about. Fuck off. That's the rule. Everyone has access to them, and you should play to them. That should be an enormous part of your strategy, any team. And I don't know why Bill Belichick gets hated on for this. Every team should look at rules this way. Any additional thoughts on this rule nonsense?
Well, the reason people get mad about that is they just don't think of doing that. I mean, Bill Belichick has an encyclopedic knowledge of the rules. Either that or that's why his sons are on the staff, just to read the rule book and tell them about the weird things that are in there. But no, he has such a knowledge of it that he thinks of things that nobody else does and gets creative with, and that's why people get mad about it.
Yeah, and the difference between rules in a game like football versus rules in a game like Monopoly, for instance, is that in football, you have a lot of things that are, if they're not subjective, and I don't think subjective is the right word, they are judgment calls. So, like, what is a completed catch is a judgment call. There are criteria, but at some point, it's going to be the judgment of the ref, you know, down to the wire. Or what is offensive interference, pass interference, or defensive pass interference. They're going to be judgment calls. And understanding what the judgment calls are in a game versus what the hardline rules are versus what, you know, the specifics are of penalties and whatnot is an important element of defining a strategy. Whether you're playing this game or any other game, it's just that in this game, the element of judgment is far more important than in Monopoly. It enhances the mind, to me. That's one of the elements of the game that makes it a game of intellect as much as it is of a game of physicality.
So when you're saying judgment, you don't mean the referee's judgment.
Well, what I mean is, like, you know, when you have certain criteria for offensive pass interference, you could design plays in a way that take you up to a certain point, but don't cross the criteria, and then see how the referees are going to call it that year, for instance, and adjust accordingly. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams do that. I mean, you see that in basketball, especially, where there's more interaction between the coaches and the refs. In basketball, the coaches will start yelling at the refs if they're calling things a certain way, so that later on they won't call it the same way in the game. And then they start designing plays or telling their team to run plays they've designed in that direction. Whereas in the NFL, when they talk about they have a script, you know, they're going to run 12, 15 plays to start. Not only are you seeing what the other team's going to do, you're going to see what the refs are going to do. This is actually something that I really want to be out there. And honestly, if I had time, I would do it. But I know that these teams are scouting refs. Okay, this is this ref. These are the penalties he tends to call. These are the teams he's played against. This is who tends to win. This is what's on his crew. Oh, he has longer games than normal. All of these things are going to affect the game, and you can't be a good coach and not take care of these things. You can't not have these things in mind. So I really wish someone out there, either the mainstream media, and I may have said this before, I don't remember, it sounds familiar. It seems like something I've either ranted about before, I've ranted about in my head, or thought like, yeah, you're a genius, you should do that, but you don't have fucking time. Or some website out there like Bleacher Report or 585 or 583 or 869 or 108 or whatever the fucking site is.
8675309.
Yeah, exactly. That site with the Neil Silver guy or whatever.
Hi-ho Nate Silver, 538.
Okay, yes, there we go. Have him do it. Where are all the stats on referees? Who are the refs that call the most pass interference? Who are the refs that call the most holding? Who are the refs that have the least penalties per game? Who are the refs that penalizes offense more than defense? Who are the refs that penalize cornerbacks more? Coaches have to scout this. Why is this not common knowledge? Because we're not allowed to criticize the refs? Fuck you, you pussies. Put that knowledge out there.
Do you know which referee has reffed the most games since 1999?
I'm going to guess, just because he's always on my screen, Ed Hockley.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that dude's so prominent. And second place has to be Jerome Booger.
Let me take a look. It's Byron Boston.
That dude's doing a good job because nobody knows who he is.
That's right. Ed Hockley, number one, with 299 games.
Yeah, there you go. And how high is Jerome Booger?
Booger?
Booger? The gay black guy from Louisiana.
I don't see him. Oh, here he is, 206.
Yeah, so he's pretty high, too. He's just memorable because he's, like, got the most stereotypically gay voice ever. This is like, this episode's absurd, but just going with it. Yeah. He's just, you know, he's just got the most ridiculously obvious gay voice ever. Maybe he's not gay, but if like when all of the, like, who's going to be the first to come out? I was like, okay, Jerome, you're going to be the first referee to come out. Do it. And he never did.
There's still time. There's still time. Maybe he's just finding himself. Let's bring it back to football a little bit. And did you watch, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, the Pittsburgh-Green Bay game?
I watched bits and pieces of it. I started watching it and I went, wait, this is going to be a game. What the fuck's wrong with Pittsburgh? And then I kept tuning in when I could because Pittsburgh kept keeping Green Bay in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, Pittsburgh did everything they could to hand that game to Green Bay, and Green Bay did everything they could to hand it back to Pittsburgh. And specifically, the game in its loss came down entirely to clock management and Mike McCarthy showing that he is once again a terrible head coach and is nothing without Aaron Rodgers.
Dude, nobody knows clock management, though. Like, I sit there in the bar on Sunday, and I see all the games, and I see the clock management stuff going on, and people start saying just the dumbest bullshit ever, and then I explain to them what's going on, especially with the Patriots game, and they're like, wow, that guy's exactly correct. And I'm like, it's not that hard of a concept.
I mean, what? The Packers had the ball back with like a minute to go or something. The game was tied. You know, they could have run... all they had to do was to get some really easy completions or a few yardage runs, and they're throwing these difficult things. They throw some incomplete passes, take a timeout at one point. You're like, what the fuck are you doing? And they give the ball back to Ben Roethlisberger with something like 40 seconds and two timeouts.
Well, didn't Collinsworth even say at some point? Wasn't he like, oh, the Packers are just playing for overtime now?
Yeah, except that they weren't.
Yeah, I know.
Because there was way too much time left for you to be trying to quote-unquote kill the clock, especially when you're throwing ridiculously stupid deep passes and having people run out of bounds and shit. Like, you're not trying to save the clock at that point. You're trying to get completions to take time off the clock to go to overtime. Especially if you're Brett Hundley or whatever the fuck your name is, and you're on a team without Aaron Rodgers.
Brett,
you are lucky to be in that position, and you need to take it to overtime, flip a coin, and see if you can get a field goal. That's really your best chance of winning the game, not leaving 40 seconds on the clock and two timeouts with a veteran quarterback who only needs a field goal to win the game. Like, it was an insanely bad management of time, and it just goes to show, once again, that clock management is one of the strategic elements of football that everyone gets wrong.
So I have to ask you about this game then, if we're talking about how the Packers blew it with clock management.
Yeah.
Is this an example of the Steelers not being as good as their record and eventually not winning in the playoffs? Or is this an example of them being like the Broncos from a couple seasons ago where they kept winning games in this way and we were like, there's no way they can keep winning these games, but they did.
The Steelers have had a problem historically with Mike Tomlin as coach where it was until like last season under Mike Tomlin's tenure, they had a losing record to teams with losing records. So it's something where Tomlin can get them up for games against good opponents, but can't
except
get that
the
same
Patriots.
Work ethic. Except the Patriots, who are not their rival, because the Patriots have whooped them about every time they've played. But they can't get them up for teams who are bad. No team is completely terrible, but teams that they should handily beat based on talent. And that, to me, is a coaching thing. I'm not sure how you could be anything other than a coaching thing.
Oh, I agree. It's a focus thing. It's a coaching thing. And I think it was demonstrated by the interview he gave after the game, right? So the Patriots have the Bills next, and then they have the Dolphins again, and then they have the Steelers. But for some reason, Cowher has already decided to talk about the Patriots game. Now... Yeah. We did last week, and we said that game will probably decide home field advantage in the AFC Championship game. I agree. I'm not disagreeing with Mike Tomlin, but I also don't coach an NFL team, and I also don't think about that obsessively. But he said that game will be fireworks.
Yes. And
now,
this
here's
was a
thing.
Pregame interview, by the way. This was before they played the Packers.
Oh, Jesus. If I had known that, I would have bet all my money against the line because the line was like minus 14. You could have made a shitload of money. Man, that was my ticket right there. You got to text me these things ahead of time, man. I'm looking for that one bet where I can make like $10,000 and then be done. That was it. Yeah.
That was it.
Oh.
That was it.
Yes. See, these are indicators, people. If you're paying attention, did you see that? That's an indicator. The Steelers not focused on the Packers, Sunday night game, and then he makes that comment. Man, that was a huge indicator. So that was pregame, and he's mentioning fireworks. And the thing is, like I said, I have sympathy for him. This is my favorite time of year. This is my favorite time of year because when I go to stores, every time I'm walking in, I just have a bell excessively rung in my ear over and over again to try and get me to donate. It's like they're trying to annoy you into giving money. But the worst part is they don't stop when you give them money. They do it more. It's like... Yeah. It's like you're being tortured and they give you the information and you give them the information and you get waterboarded worse. You're in Guantanamo and they go from Britney Spears to One Direction. Like,
that's why. Have you seen the commercial with Dak Prescott and the Tostitos sales and the bell ringing?
No.
I was wondering if they were being purposely ironic or if they just completely didn't get it, but it was Tostitos, and like they're like, every time we sell a bag of Tostitos, this giant Salvation Army bell is going to ring. And it's in the middle of the Salvation Army office, and it's just constantly clanging, and they all find it horribly annoying, and they're hiding under their desks and shit. And all I could think of was like, do you not see the irony in this? Or, It was a weird advertising campaign.
Hopefully they're self-aware, but this may be a case of like, the dude who's so awkward that he doesn't realize he's awkward, so he doubles down on it.
Yeah.
That's what this could be.
That's what it seemed like. That's how it came off as. It didn't come off as self-aware.
Interesting. So it's like they're wearing a pocket protector and someone's like, I really like your pocket protector in like the Mean Girls way, where like they turn around and go, I effing hate that pocket protector. But they're so unself-aware that they come back tomorrow and they're wearing a pocket protector in the other pocket too.
That's right. Their pants pockets have protectors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no. This is my favorite time of year because I agree with Mike Tomlin. Now, hold on. What? I know what you're thinking. It is fireworks. It is fireworks because this is a show about narratives. None of the narratives matter anymore, Daniel. All that matters is winning. I mean, in college, it's the ACC title game now. Clemson wins. They're in the playoff. They win those two games. They win the national title game. The Patriots, I think they're one game away from the division title. Then it's just, what's the seeding going to be? And then when you get to the playoffs, win, get to the Super Bowl, win, and you win the Super Bowl. That's it. None of the shit matters. None of the talking matters. None of the injuries matter. It's like, I don't think about that Hightower's hurt anymore. I don't think about that Edelman's hurt anymore. Like, it's just all that matters is what happens on the field. We know who these teams are. They are who we thought they are in playoffs. I mean, it's just those two sound bites over and over again. So I agree with Mike Tomlin that it's going to be fireworks and I enjoy it.
It's going to be fireworks, but to bring it back to Belichick, as we always do, it's just about the next team. And I think the focusing on the Patriots and Tomlin alluding to the fact that it's going to be the Patriots-Steelers in the AFC Championship game is good drama. It's good TV, but I'm not sure it's good coaching.
No, it's terrible coaching. It's terrible, terrible coaching. And this is what happens when you get in a slump or there's that one person you can't beat. You obsess over them, right? This was Rex Ryan. Remember when the Jets beat the Patriots twice in a row in the playoffs, 2 years in a row?
Yes.
That's what this is. Rex Ryan built a team to beat the Patriots. Didn't build the team to beat anyone else. And that's what happens when you self-fixate. You know, credit to Rex Ryan. He actually accomplished his goal. The Steelers can't even do that. But they're so obsessed with beating the Patriots that they're going to lose to the Patriots, or they typically lose to the Patriots.
Yeah, they do typically lose to the Patriots. Well, I'm excited for more good football. I am excited about the Steelers game, but we're on, is it the Bills that, and then the Dolphins, right? Not the Dolphins. We just played the Dolphins. We wouldn't play them twice in a row.
And, so it's Bills, Dolphins, and I think we talked about this last week, but we're three games up on the Bills, and there are five games left in the season. Or there are four games left in the season. We're 9-2?
Yeah, 9-2.
So there's five games left?
Yes.
Right.
I'm just going to keep saying yes until one of them is right.
Right. So if we win, we'll be four games up with four games left in the season, and the Bills only play us once. So my question for you is, mathematically, do we win the division if we beat the Bills?
I think so, yes. I'm not a mathematician. I didn't go to your fancy numbers school, but I think that is the case, yes.
It may be that, or we may have to beat the Dolphins, because there may be like a tiebreaker if like we split the season series with the Dolphins or the Bills. Well, the Dolphins are five games back now, so I guess if we split the season series with the Bills, maybe there'll be like a conference tiebreaker or something. So maybe it's we have to beat the Dolphins too, but I mean, barring Tom Brady dying, I don't see us losing the division at this point.
Yeah, although, you know, it's funny, I had that moment that you have at the beginning of the game during that first drive where he was terrible on his passes, and I was like, is this it? Is he gone? Is his arm gone? Is this the end?
It wasn't his arm. I mean, something we haven't talked about, but we can say briefly, is I think it was obvious his Achilles was hurting him.
Yeah.
That's,
you know, how I know it was hurting him? In his pregame interview, he said 100% not a problem.
Yeah.
That's a strong indicator from Tom Brady that he's actually injured. So anyone who doesn't speak Brady at this point.
I am not mad at Giselle at all. Oh, man, that's going to be a rough car ride home from the Super Bowl.
That's right.
Yeah, no, and it's because of that, my only thought was, man, I hope he can get over this injury. Because that's the major thing when you get old, is it's harder to recover from injuries.
Yeah. Oh. Well, hopefully we also didn't lose Nate Ebner. But
supposedly he's out for the season, FYI.
Oh. Okay. Well, we'll next man up. We'll make it work.
All right. How can people reach you to make you more excited about football? I know we're playing the Bills, but...
Well, Tom Brady, if you're listening, you can tweet me at Daniel T. Richards, except that you would have to start a Twitter account. So you can Instagram me at Daniel T. Richards, too, because I know you have one of those. And, of course, I'm on Facebook @DT Richards, I think is what I am on Facebook. But you can just Google me. You'll find me if you Google Daniel T. Richards. I'm everywhere.
If you get a DM from Tom Brady, I'm just going to delete all social media.
Delete your account.
All right, if you want to reach me, you can find me on all the social medias at The Midside. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. You can talk to me on all those platforms. And if you enjoy what you heard here, you can check out our main show. If you're listening to this show on iTunes through your podcast app, whatever podcast app you use on your smartphone, you can just go to one of the other episodes that are called the blank edition, whatever word is in the middle there. And that's the main show. That's the flagship show. Welcome to Midside. So check that out. It's more of Daniel and I, and we talk about things like the news and arts. Otherwise, just, you know, keep listening to the show. We enjoy having you here with us. Thanks for checking in with us. Now we're on to the Buffalo Bills.
Playoffs.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.